Welcome to another Evidence Podcast. Our goal is to provide valuable information from experts on how you can protect yourself. Today's topic is sexual harassment. It's an honor and pleasure to be speaking with Dr. Bernice Sandler, who many call the godmother of Title IX. Dr. Sandler played an integral role in the passage of Title IX, which has dramatically changed the course of education for girls and women in the United States. And she has been a front-runner in the fight against sexual harassment ever since. Dr. Sandler also works as an expert witness in sexual harassment cases and has trained many administrators on how to deal with sexual harassment in both education and employment. Dr. Sandler, thank you for taking the time to join us today.
I'm delighted you asked me to join you. There's been a lot of progress in ending sex discrimination and ending sexual harassment, but we still have many, many problems in these areas. Many women, young and old, as well as many men, often face these issues alone and without the information that could really help them deal with this.
What is sexual harassment?
Sexual harassment is it's unwanted sexual behavior that makes someone uncomfortable. It can be verbal, it can be physical, or it can be both. It covers a really wide range of behaviors from name-calling all the way up to sexual assault and sexual abuse. It's a form of bullying, where one person is trying to intimidate or annoy or coerce another person by using sexuality. We see it in schools. We sometimes see it even in kindergarten. We see it all the way through college, and we certainly see it in the workplace. Sometimes the sexual harassment comes from a person who's in power, like a boss or a coach, sometimes even a teacher. Peers, colleagues, coworkers, and other students can also engage in sexual bullying. Let me give you some examples. It's sexualized insults, it's graffiti, it's pictures, cartoons, it's pornography, it's sexual gifts, sexual teasing, pressure for sexual activity, unwanted phone calls, certainly computer harassment, stalking, offensive touching, sexual assault, even touching one's genitals and simulating sexual intercourse. So you can see it covers a wide range of behavior.
Sounds like it could be extremely common. How big of a problem is sexual harassment in the U.S. today?
It's a really big problem in schools and in the workplace. In schools, it's both girls and boys that about 75% of girls and boys report that they've been sexually harassed by other students. In contrast, only about 35% of students report that they've experienced what we would call traditional bullying. In the workplace, it varies enormously from very little to a lot, like maybe 70, 80% in some workplaces, because even in the same workplace, there's a lot of variation in the setting. If there's a cafeteria, the amount of sexual harassment there might be very different than in the shipping department, while another department might have a very high rate. A lot of the studies indicate in the workplace 40%, but a lot depends on the workplace itself. It's higher in traditionally male-dominated fields, such as construction. It's less in women-dominated fields, such as nursing. But it can happen anywhere, and it can happen to anyone, young, old, male, female, white, African-American, disabled people. No one is really totally protected against this. It really does happen to almost, it can happen to almost anyone.
Well, those are some really big numbers. Can you give us just a couple of scenarios of what sexual harassment would be?
It varies, as I mentioned earlier, but sometimes you get a lot of sexual talk, sexual teasing, and women in particular are not always sure how to respond, because if they ignore it, they think the person knows they don't like it, and sometimes if they ignore it, it means to someone else, ah, she really likes it, she really likes me, she's attracted to me, or she's so vulnerable I can keep doing it because she doesn't know how to stop me. We get sexual rumors, we get pornography sent to people, we get women being given a lot of sexual comments, we get men, whether they're gay or not, are very often accused of being gay and given a lot of insulting remarks around that issue. So the examples just really, really vary. I mean, the simple definition of unwanted sexual behavior is a very good definition. And although it sounds like that's in the eye of the beholder, courts have been very, very good on this. The courts have said It's what a reasonable person would feel. A reasonable person would feel this behavior is unwanted. In other words, if you just patted someone on the shoulder as we were talking and said, "They're there," or something like that, a reasonable person would not say that's sexual harassment. On the other hand, if the hand descended over the breast, because sexual harassment includes unwanted touching, that's clearly a reasonable person would say, "This really bothered me."
What are my legal rights, and what laws are in place regards to sexual harassment?
People have a lot more rights now than they used to. The Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, which prohibits discrimination in employment on the basis of race, color, religion, national origin, and sex, includes protection against sexual harassment. So people can sue, and that's the ultimate thing that people do, is they can sue, but it also puts a responsibility on employers, particularly if they're smart employers, to make sure that everybody knows what sexual harassment is, knows that the workplace is not going to tolerate that kind of behavior so that they're not sued. So that's one law that's there. Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972 protects virtually all students in K-12 and in colleges and universities. Title IX prohibits sex discrimination in schools that get federal money, and all K-12 schools get federal money. All public and private colleges, with the exception of two, get federal loans, grants, and so forth and so on. So those are two main laws. Many states have laws, in addition, that prohibit sexual harassment. Also, some other laws that were not directly intended, perhaps, to cover sexual harassment, but they do, such as what they call torts, which would be like intentional infliction of emotional harm. And this is where you sue an individual who's been bothering you and inflicting emotional harm and damage to you. So people can use that. At the extreme form of sexual harassment, which is sexual assault or sexual abuse, criminal assault, rape, and so forth, those laws have also been used, because the extreme form of sexual harassment is sexual assault. And those laws cover very often unwanted touching of private parts, so that people can be vulnerable to those laws that cover criminal sexual abuse. So there's a wide range of legal things that people can do. And in addition to things that people can do legally, there are other things that they can do and try to handle it themselves.
Well, can you explain a few things that a person should do in response to sexual harassment?
Well, one of the things we always tell people to do is to write things down. It's really important when some things that are bad are happening to you is to write it down, the day it happened, what you felt, who saw it, what anybody said, what the other person said or did, and how you responded, or maybe you didn't respond at all. That's how you responded, by not saying anything or doing anything. When you write something down, one, it can be used as evidence if you ever get to court, but just as important, and maybe even more important, when you write things down, you begin to see it in a somewhat different light. It's like telling a friend, in a sense, but here you have a written record, is you begin to evaluate the information somewhat differently than if it's not written down. It really makes a difference. People very often feel a little better and a little more in charge if they start to write it down, because they're keeping a record. They have something to do. And the fact that it can count as legal evidence if needed is also very, very helpful. There are things that people can do informally, and some of these are helpful. One, ignoring it is usually not a good idea unless you can get away and are never going to see the person again, like street harassment. You might choose to ignore rather than deal with it. But in the workplace where you have to deal with the same person every day, it's useful to have some things in advance that you could say, for example. One, you can be very direct, and you could say, "You just said," and then you describe what they said or did, "and I don't like that behavior. I want you to stop it right away." That's a little hard for some people to do. For some people, it feels very confrontational. Some people just don't want to do that, and that's okay, because we have other things that people can say and do. One of the things people can say is to stand up very tall, gasp, and then say, "I beg your pardon," in a very strong voice, and that's extraordinarily helpful sometimes and does stop the behavior. Because it's not what the other person, the harasser, is expecting, and what we're trying to do is give people some ways that will shake up the harasser and that the harasser will understand what it is that you're actually doing. Another one that some people have done, and this one's kind of fun, is you prepare a notebook that says, "Sexual sexual harassment notebook in big letters. And this is particularly helpful if it's been happening day after day after day and you're not quite sure what to do or how to stop it. And you prepare some questions in advance, and when the person says something sexual to you, you say, "I am so glad you just said that. I'm doing some research on sexual harassment, and I wonder if you would answer some questions for me." And the person is usually quite surprised and very often says yes. And then you ask things like, "Now, how often do you do this? Was this like the first time today?" You have a bunch of questions like that, and it's kind of fun just working up the questions. If they ask who you're doing the research for, they can always use my name. And I'm in Washington, D.C., and my office is in the phone book, so I'm a legitimate person. They could say they're doing the research for me. But that's another thing people can do. People also need to find out who in their company or in their school is responsible for sexual harassment complaints. Going to complain about it, if you can't stop it yourself, and there's no law that says you have to stop it yourself, incidentally. You don't have to tell the person. You can go right to someone in your employment place and go to that person and say, "This is what's happening. I'm very uncomfortable. I want it to stop." And they can tell you what they can do. They can sometimes tell the person. Very often they can tell the person, "This behavior is against our policy. It's against the law, and you have to stop it, or you can get fired." And that's what good employees very often do. They tell that person very clearly that this behavior is not acceptable. Sometimes the person says, "I don't want him or her to know that I spoke to you." And then the person might say, "Well, here's something maybe I can try. We can do some training in your unit. We won't mention that that you complain. But as one of the examples, we'll use an example similar to the behavior that you experienced, and we'll see if that works. If that doesn't work, we'll figure out some other things we can do." So people don't have to sit by and put up with this kind of behavior in the workplace. It's against the law. It affects productivity. It makes people feel very uncomfortable. Continual sexual harassment can lead to all kinds of physical and emotional symptoms, and it certainly affects productivity in the workplace. And we certainly don't want children or students to experience sexual harassment because it affects their learning as well.
Well, that's really good feedback and great information for our listeners and anybody who's involved in any cases regarding or related to sexual harassment. This concludes our podcast, and I want to thank everyone for listening. I'd like to thank Dr. Bernice Sandler. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
How can people learn more about the information that you provide and possibly get in contact with you?
I have a website that's www.berniesandler.com, and that's BERNICESANDLER.com. And it has some information on sexual harassment. It has a lot more techniques that people can use in dealing with sexual harassment, including the diary.
If you need more information about sexual harassment, please do visit her website. Again, that address is www.berniesandler.com. Remember what Dr. Sandler said. If you are involved in a sexual harassment dispute, it is important that you write everything down when it happens. The Evidence Digital Diary gives you a great way to collect your evidence. With the Evidence Digital Diary, you now have court-presentable facts, chronological documentation, you have to be organized, and credibility of evidence. Now that's key. Don't wait. Sign up for the Evidence Digital Diary today at www.evidence.com. This is Andy Williams with Evidence Corporation reminding you that facts count. Don't forget, collect everything and start protecting yourself today.